and our panel are still here. Bobby McDonagh, Niamh Lyons, Irene Sands, Conor Brophy and Nora Casey. But we are joined now by Enda Brady from Sky News. Enda, good morning.
Hi, Brendan.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Enda, we're hearing on Sky News this morning, apparently Jeremy Hunt has made the astonishing revelation that Angela Merkel has told him that Europe is willing to renegotiate the backstop.
He's claiming this, yes. So he spoke with the German Chancellor this week. Obviously, Jeremy Hunt is British Foreign Secretary, and he spent some time this week at the D-Day 75th commemorations. And he claims that in a private conversation with Angela Merkel, which I'm sure she'll be delighted got broadcast this morning, he claims that she told him that the EU would be willing to renegotiate the Brexit deal with a new Prime Minister. And obviously there's a bit of posturing here on Jeremy Hunt's behalf, because obviously, you know, it's making him look good that he has got the inside track with the Europeans, and that perhaps Angela Merkel, in his view, sees him as someone that
is anointing him. Yeah, you seem like a reasonable character, because Michel Barnier last week was very firm that there will be no renegotiation, and it's fantasy land to think there could be. So tell me, Theresa May, who kind of shuffled off the stage on Friday, I saw some people saying that she actually had a very good week, in a sense, her final week as head of the Tories.
Well, it's a pretty low bar, let's be honest, Brendan, you know, in terms of how weeks have gone over the last 3 years for her, almost, as Prime Minister. She's had some weeks from hell. This week, you know, she couldn't really go wrong. You know, you had the 75th D-Day commemoration starting off down in Portsmouth, and she went down there, she mixed with the veterans. She's, you know, despite all of the negativity and the difficulties that she's had, she was still the British Prime Minister heading into D-Day commemorations. So she's mixing with veterans and their families, and then she went over to Normandy, and I thought she gave a fine speech. You know, she carried it off, and the one phrase that she said she wanted to say to the veterans who were there 75 years ago, thank you. And I think she did have a good week. You know, there weren't any kind of massive problems with Trump. The Trump visit went off, again, you know, low kind of expectations. So what more could you expect in the end? She had a decent week, and then she just kind of shuffled off very, very quietly. I live in Oxfordshire. She's just up the road from me here. She goes to church of a Sunday with her husband, Philip. I would imagine that's what she's done again today. And I'm sure she is watching all of the political commentary and privately just thinking, I'm glad I'm out of it.
Yeah, it must make her think, though, having had a kind of a reasonably good week, if only there were normal times, I could have been a good Prime Minister, if only I hadn't had Brexit, if only I was around doing big set pieces and stuff. So listen, before she was even gone, obviously, the race to succeed her had started, and there's quite a lineup, but it's kind of degenerated this weekend into who's taken what drugs and when, hasn't it?
Yes, high office has taken on a new meaning in the UK this weekend, because it's the question all the journalists are asking of the candidates, and you know the field itself is quite wide. The last count, there's at least 11 still in there. Michael Gove, let's talk about Michael Gove. He was the Justice Secretary here. He is an extremely, extremely ambitious man, and the story came out over the weekend that he had acknowledged that he had taken cocaine on several occasions in his early 30s when he was working as a journalist at the Times. So has that revelation been enough to seriously damage his credibility as Prime Minister? You know, if you look at it, if you're elected as British Prime Minister, at some point you're going to have to travel to the United States. Two problems here now. He has acknowledged taking a Class A drug, and secondly, he has previously been to the United States. He's filled in the electronic visa form, and there's a question on there that they ask you, have you ever taken illegal substances? And I'm guessing he said no. So let's see how we could work with a British Prime Minister not able to travel to America.
And Enda, what seems to be bubbling up around it as well is that there is this sense of privilege around Gove now. The fact of what the drug was and the circumstances and everything, that this guy is privileged out of touch, kind of posh
boy. It's a perfect storm for him, because if you look at it, you know, he is extremely middle class. He's a wealthy man. His wife writes for the Daily Mail newspaper. They're quite a prominent couple in London. And here we have this whole issue. You know, you see the crime stories that come out of London, and I'm not just concentrating on London, but other cities as well in the UK. And a lot of the terrible gangland violence, knife crime in particular, is related to the use and the supply of cocaine. And when you see 15 and 16-year-old boys getting stabbed to death in certain streets, in certain suburbs, they're not the ones consuming this drug. It's going to dinner-class parties. Dinner parties held by middle-class people. And Michael Gove fits a lot of this criteria. So he's had a very difficult weekend. He's come out, I noticed he was on Andrew Marr this morning on the BBC, and it was put to him that, you know, you could have gone to prison. Other people have. And he says that he profoundly regrets taking the drug. Let's see if this is seriously damaging his run, and will he still be in the race in a week's time?
And we are seeing, I think, the dark arts are emerging very strongly here, aren't they? I thought it was hilarious that Dominic Raab, who like doesn't want to be the one to stick the knife into Gove, is saying, you know, I actually quite admire his honesty. But it turns out, doesn't it, that the major major person in the frame for putting this out there is Raab and a woman who now works for him.
So the story doing the rounds in Westminster today is that how this all came out. There is a book coming out soon, by the way, by the journalist Owen Bennett, and the feeling is that this whole issue of Gove and cocaine will be well covered in that book, and that Gove took a kind of preemptive strike attitude really Friday night when he was made aware of this, that he'd get in first. And of course the story that ended up in the Daily Mail, which is a newspaper his wife works for. So the feeling was that Gove was getting on the front foot here. But the story behind the story is that 3 years ago, you'll remember, when David Cameron moved aside, there was obviously the race to become PM, which ultimately Theresa May won. Michael Gove ran for Prime Minister, ran for leader of the Conservative Party, and he was in a room with six other people, all his team, and effectively kind of media training and coaching and kind of let's spot some obstacles down the road before they come up. And the question was asked, have you ever done drugs? There were six other people in that room, five of whom still work for Michael Gove. One person does not. Beth Armstrong is her name, former Gove aide, and she now works with Dominic Raab. And that's how people are joining up the dots. The Raab campaign have said categorically that they are not involved in leaking this story, and they admire his honesty. And of course, you know, whoever wields the knife in British politics rarely wears the crown. Gove discovered that, of course, anywhere. A few years ago.
Yeah, okay. And stay with us a sec. I want to bring in the panel. Bobby, you were interested in this story as well. I presume this was not a problem that you would have had back in the day working with politicians, or that would have been a problem in diplomatic circles.
No, certainly not.
It's a very modern kind of issue, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, the issue, one of the issues that comes up and that's being addressed in the British media is one law for the rich and one for the poor in relation to what happens to people who take drugs or admit taking drugs. And as you said, there's a sort of competition now for the Tory candidates for leadership to boast about what drugs they took. I'd be a little bit more worried about what disorientating substances people are still taking when you look at some of the promises that they're making in the leadership campaign. I mean, I heard of this Jeremy Hunt story that Chancellor Merkel had told him that the backstop could be renegotiated. I simply don't believe it at all. It's the umpteenth time that the British government has said that the Germans are going to ride to their rescue. Mm-hmm. The deal that Cameron got before the referendum, the Germans were supposed to sort it for him. Then German business was going to come riding in on a charger to solve it. So, look, I mean, originally there was...
Should somebody do something about the backstop? Would a time limit get us out of all this nightmare? Would a time limit would have kept Theresa May a more reasonable character from our point of view than Boris?
Well, Brendan, if it were a backstop with a time limit, it wouldn't be a backstop at all. I mean, the whole point of the backstop is that there is an arrangement to ensure that the delicate balances of the Good Friday Agreement will be preserved unless and until some new alternative arrangements are found. If you put in an end point to the backstop, then in effect you're saying that in 5 or 6 years' time, or whenever you put it in, that the balances of the Good Friday Agreement will just disappear in a puff of smoke. Mm. So it's if there was an easy answer, it should be taken, but I don't think that there is an easy answer.
There does seem to be talk around the front runners and is there that some kind of time limit on the backstop could be an option somewhere.
Yes, there is, but let me tell you what I've heard in the past week as well, Brendan, talking to Conservative MPs here. Their internal polling inside the Conservative Party is showing that 75% of the membership want a no-deal Brexit. That is what is playing inside the Conservative Party quite loudly at the moment. October 31st is looming large. I think there'll be a lot of discussion about the backstop, but make no mistake, Boris is the favourite to be the next Prime Minister, and he has already said that he wants to crack on, deal or no deal, out on October 31st.
Nora?
I think the issue in the papers today is right across the board, there's 11 candidates, likely to be more because the deadline's tomorrow. So the extraordinary renegotiation of terms with the Brexit agreement in almost every single headline relating to every single contender. And Sajid Javid, who's the Home Secretary, is one of the contenders. He had a story today in the Independent, the British Independent, to say that we should give $500 million to the Irish to sort their own border out. Fair dues now, we caused the problem. Give them $500 million and let them sort it out themselves. I mean, I don't know what bit of that he doesn't understand in terms of the moral obligations, let alone anything else in terms of the border. And it's not the Irish border, it's the British border. Boris Johnson came out and said he would guarantee a no-deal Brexit. So there's no doubt that we have four elections in London, in the House, over the next month to get down to the last two. But I'll tell you where all those drug revelations are going to come into play. The final two go out to the Conservative homeland. Richard's family lived in Lincolnshire. I think up there they single-handedly voted for Brexit. So of the 100,000 or so, there's about 120,000 Conservative members who will vote on the final two. They are people, as you pointed out earlier, between Dublin and rural Ireland that are not, they are more Conservative, they're older, they don't take kindly to people.
They're not hanging around the grocery shop.
They don't think it's
people.
Hip. Yeah.
Yeah. And in terms of the other contenders then, do you think Boris is a slam dunk at this stage, or who else might be in with a shout?
Right, Boris's biggest enemy is himself. That has always been the case. I've known Boris Johnson 20 years, following him around from before he was an MP, when he ended up my MP here in Oxfordshire, when he was a journalist. Boris has given one interview, it's in the Sunday Times today with Tim Shipman, it's a good read, spells out his case, but I think Boris is very much his own worst enemy, and his advisors, for once, you know, when Boris goes quiet, and there's no media coverage, and there's no columns describing Muslim women as letterboxes, and, you know, none of the kind of hullabaloo that you get around Boris, when Boris goes quiet, things are getting serious. Now, he knows he is a matter of weeks away from becoming PM. I think he will be secretly just watching the whole Gove thing implode and hoping that that's the way that goes over the next week. Then you've got other candidates. You've got Andrea Leadsom. You know, she got down to the last two last time and then, of course, pulled out at the very last minute because she realised that Theresa May was just so far ahead of her. You've got Jeremy Hunt. I think Hunt is a serious candidate. Foreign Secretary, very popular. He looks the part. He is a statesman. He has done well here as health secretary despite opposition to NHS reforms that he wanted to bring in. Sajid Javid is in the mix as well. But I think if it comes down to the final two and it gets Boris versus someone else on the final two, Boris will win that because he is so, so popular with those people you mentioned, the 120,000 plus Conservative members, and they are deeply Conservative people in rural constituencies.
And isn't it extraordinary that they're choosing the next Prime Minister of Britain just themselves? As somebody likened it last week, they're choosing the Prime Minister of Britain and they're treating it as if they were electing the President of the golf club, essentially. That they do it.
63 million people live on this island here. 63 million people, and the future of the country now will be decided by 100,000 plus, mainly older, 60, 65 plus, white middle class people living predominantly in South and Southern England.
Conor Brophy.
Yeah, pale, stale, male and frail, as they say. But I think one thing you need to understand, and one thing that I think we should talk about in this context, is that Peterborough by-election during the week, which has scared the life out of the Conservatives, because you had a constituency that voted 61% for Brexit. You have a Labour MP returned who skated through the gap, because between the Brexit Party and the Conservatives, they split the vote. Whatever version of Brexit emerges, the last thing they want is Prime Minister Jeremy Corbyn, and they feel that they'd be handing it to him on a plate.
And I think Enda Farage is using this now, isn't he? He's saying that people are going to learn very quickly that if you vote Conservative, you're basically handing it to Labour, because what happened in Peterborough will happen everywhere.
Oh, precisely. He's the big winner the last few weeks, the last few months, and the months to come. Farage will keep winning. You know, it sounds ridiculous given that they haven't got a single MP, but this political party of his has been in existence 8 weeks. And Labour and the Conservatives both know that he will hoover up votes from both of those parties. Any by-elections that come, if there is a general election, you know, he's like the dog in the manger. He can't eat the cake himself, but by God, no one else is going to have it. And he is really in an interesting position now. You know, a party that he formed from scratch very, very quickly, and he basically has one mantra that he just keeps chanting, and people are, you know, Brexit, 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 and people are voting for him.
And there seems to be a push within the Tories as well that some people seeing a need to move more to the right to starve out Farage.
Yes, well, again, this is playing into, it's all about the party. This is playing into the internal polling that I've been told by MPs in person. 75% of the membership want a no-deal Brexit, and they see that as the only way to kill off Farage. So it's all about kind of wiping out Farage, getting him out of the landscape completely. Cameron failed with it. It cost them his job. Theresa May, again, failed to deal with the situation, ultimately cost her the biggest job of her life. And now we have the next Prime Minister coming in, and will it be the case that Boris Johnson or whoever wins the Tory leadership party again ultimately gets undone by a man like Nigel Farage? It's a fascinating time, but make no mistake, if Boris Johnson gets onto that final ballot of two, so the MPs in Parliament, Conservative MPs, will whittle it down, 11 will go all the way down to two, and then envelopes will start appearing on letterboxes and doorsteps across Lincolnshire and Oxfordshire and Berkshire and everywhere else people vote Conservative, where the membership are. It will be the membership who decide who the next Prime Minister is.
Bobby.
I think it's worth just saying a word about Rory Stewart, who's one of the candidates. I mean, he's not likely to win, although he's going up in the polls, but he said in today's Observer that if we really want to change, we have to face reality. And I think it's really important that there's at least one candidate who is saying that, because, as you said, a lot of the candidates are talking about renegotiating the backstop. They're still talking amongst themselves. It isn't going to happen. And Rory Stewart also says today that true courage is the middle point between cowardice and foolhardiness. And I think that's an important point too, because there's been a lot of cowardice in British politics about standing up to Nigel Farage and his xenophobia and his hostility to Europe. And now there's also foolhardiness with people talking about let's have a no-deal Brexit no matter what damage it's going to do to the UK. So I think it's just worth acknowledging that there is a voice out there who's saying sensible things. And one other thing about Boris, I mean, I can judge this better than me, and he does clearly have a strong chance of being elected Prime Minister, but a key thing about Boris is that he doesn't actually believe in anything. So for example, when he was the Mayor of London, he was progressive, he was tolerant, he was pro-business. But when it suited him to build up his profile in the party, he became xenophobic, retro, anti-business. So, look, it's a big risk, and I'm not advocating that he be chosen, but he is capable of blowing with the wind.
Yeah, and of course, he it was a toss of a coin whether he'd be a Brexiteer or a Remainer, wasn't it? Nora, what do you make of Boris?
Actually, to Bobby's point, I was in London when Ken Livingstone was elected Mayor of London. In fact, I chaired the hustings when he said, we're going to have a huge St. Patrick's Day festival to arrive in New York. And apart from the Council of Irish Counties Association, a small little group of them walking down Westminster every year, there'd never been a festival. So Ken Livingstone and myself as chair worked for 8 years, beautiful festival, took over Trafalgar Square, did battle with Westminster Council. Boris got elected. He slashed the funding. Mad loony Ken going green, he used to say. And so that year, we were starved of all of our funding. I said, I'll do one more year, and turned up at the parade. He gave a third of what Ken Livingstone gave. And he said, I'll walk the parade, but I basically won't walk to the end of it. And we start off in thousands, tens of thousands of lining the streets. Good God, who are all these people? I said, they're the Irish in London. Really? They're all Irish. I said, you know, there's more firstborn Irish in London than there is in Dublin. Really? Top of the morning to you. Top of the morning to you. He walked that parade. We got into Trafalgar Square, which had 20,000 people heaving in it. And he said, leave me a minute now and I'm going to write my speech. And up went the ambassador to do his little speech and John O'Donoghue. And out comes Boris saying, welcome to the biggest capital of Ireland in the world. And the price of a pint of Guinness is only half the price of Dublin. Like he just, and thundering applause. So when you say he bends with the wind, oh my goodness, that man had no need at all to look after Irish people until he realised there'd be vote winners for him.
Brendan, as well, to bring it back to where you first started with those Jeremy Hunt remarks, it wouldn't actually surprise me if Jeremy Hunt believes that he had a conversation with Angela Merkel about the backstop and that it can be changed, because she's been the real conciliatory figure in all of this. And, you know, Germany, I think more so than any other EU country, even ourselves, wants to avoid a hard Brexit. Not so for Macron in France. I think he thinks it'll send a real message to his hard right-wingers over there. But I think Angela Merkel really disarmed us when she visited here most recently, earlier this year. And, you know, as someone who was kind of brought up in Soviet-controlled East Germany, she brought a whole new perspective to borders and walls and, you know, living in and met people from both sides of the community, which I thought was a nice touch. Mm-hmm. And all her main message was that she'll stand side by side with us. I mean, we've heard We've heard over and over again from the British side that there has been chinks in our armoury on the EU27 side. There hasn't been so far. I suppose my only fear really, and Boris being there is a particular concern, the idea that I think a British Prime Minister could genuinely be expected to come back to the EU and say, this is not my deal. You know, now Boris hasn't said that he will stop the clock, and I think he'd be loath to stall Article 50. But if that's the way he decided to go, I wonder would we have to go back into some kind of scoping phase and to have another look at perhaps things we didn't consider before.
And I presume this is Boris's plan. I mean, he talks about no deal as something that has to be on the table in order to get Europe to wake up, isn't it?
Theresa May took it off the table, and that's what her main detractors always said was the biggest weakness. Mm.
I think one thing just before you leave it, I think it's interesting to note that, and I commented to the others earlier on, it's interesting to note that there's literally nothing, practically nothing about Theresa May in any of the papers today. Mm. It's as if she's already just gone and forgotten, which is somewhat sad, a little bit. I don't think history's going to look on her particularly kindly, notwithstanding the fact that I suppose from a woman's perspective she was the second female PM, and in her closing remarks she hopes that she certainly won't be the last. And I think it's a little disappointing to see that none of the papers have anything.
Let's see how history looks on her. Let's see what's to come afterwards. It could be a case of
just before
we finish up, can you just tell us what we're going to see next? It's a kind of a knockout phase. Next Thursday is the next critical date in the leadership battle, yes?
Yes, so basically the nominations close tomorrow. Now, previously, all you needed, until the rules changed last week and so many people had come forward, all you needed previously was the backing of two MPs, which could include yourself. So if you wanted to run, it's incredible. If you wanted to run to be leader and prime minister, you put yourself forward and have a friend nominate you, and that was you into the mix. Now what they've done, you need 8 MPs to back you. And then when the race starts next week properly and the voting all starts, round by round, if you haven't got 5% in the first round, you're out. Second round, if you haven't got 10%, you're out. So they aim to have a new leader in place. You're looking middle to the end of July.
Okay, Enda Brady of Sky News, thank you very much for that, and we'll take a break.